Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
All right, we're doing it. It's another toy department. I like when I start the show with a threat. Like, this is happening. We're going to turn this car around.
Right now. We're doing it again.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say.
I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Feeling fresh. I wish I could say the sun was shining, but it's more of a glary gray situation. But, you know, life goes on.
We've got sunny in 50s here
okay.
today, which in Minnesota is definitely known as shorts weather.
Yeah, it's so. The start of summer. The Midwest, once you get into the 50s after a long, hard winter, that's the sundresses come out.
It's one of those things that I laughed at when I first moved here, and now I get 100%. I'm not big on shorts, so I won't be wearing shorts, but I get it. All right, so we have an interesting...
I'm a shorts guy, so I was definitely one of those dudes.
Yeah, sure. You are a shorts guy, aren't you?
I like shorts. I don't like pants.
How many days a year would you say you wear shorts?
Well, I mean, there was that... there was a time where it really didn't rain for like 4 years in the Bay Area. And in those years, at least 300.
Wow. Like that's
but I would say it's a little colder these days in the quote winter and rainier, and so I go pants more often. But I often go track and or sweatpants. So if we're talking like how many days do I rock real pants in a year, I don't go much past 100. That's for sure.
This is a thing that I actually used to say when I lived there. That like one of my favorite things about the Bay Area is that you could wear pants pretty much every day of the year. Like,
well,
there were like 20 days where you didn't want to wear pants. Maybe.
Well,
tops.
See, I also like that, but I like that you can also wear shorts on almost that same percentage. Like, most of the days are right in the zone where you could be comfortable either way.
I suppose. In San Francisco, it depends on what neighborhood you live on, but
that's true.
That's a whole other conversation.
But I live in Berkeley / Oakland, where it's beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah, you get a little sunnier. SF yep. in the, you know, fog thing. Anyway, we have a thousand things to talk about this week. I think we'll probably breeze through a bunch of them pretty quickly, including the returns of Barry and Veep on HBO, the ends of Miracle Workers in the case versus Adnan Syed, and Black Monday. Forgot about Black Monday, plus the premiere of What We Do in the Shadows. But I wanted to just real quickly... I'll talk a little bit about us. Are you okay with that? Are you going to be able to like maintain your composure? Because I saw us.
I got to say, I'll just let the people in on a little midweek production where you sent me a screenshot of your mother subtweeting me about us not actually being scary. And she was not the only person to confront me with that in the week between, you know, since we last spoke.
Yeah, my mom, not a horror movie buff, by the way. So, you know, I would say she's probably, I don't think she sees one a year, typically, you know what I mean? So,
as I said in response to that text, and as I'll say now again, in case your mom is listening, my biggest takeaway was her hair, which was awesome.
Yeah, dope, I believe, was the word that you used. She appreciated that. She said thank you.
Good. Okay. I wanted to make sure you conveyed that to her.
My mom's rocking purple hair these days.
Yeah, really, really, really dope purple hair.
So yeah, basically you were a wuss. That's kind of like in my notes here. That's the number one headline.
That seems to be the thing. I don't understand. It was the trailer scarier than the movie? Because the trailer sure made it seem like a really, you know, scary, push you to the edge, jump scare horror flick.
I would say
it's not my thing.
Yeah, no, I would say it's tense more than it's scary. To me, it's much more in the Hitchcockian kind of thriller school, or you know, or like The Shining than like. It's certainly not Saw. You know what I mean? Like,
right? Okay.
So it's not. Yeah, I don't like. I mean, it's not running from horror, and I don't think I would suspect that. I haven't seen any interviews with Jordan Peele about it, but I would suspect that he wouldn't mind if you call it horror. But it's not. I would not say it's particularly scary. It's much more thriller as metaphor for something else. It's a little bit ambiguous, you know.
What it's a metaphor for is ambiguous.
What it's a metaphor for is ambiguous. What actually happens, you know? It's one of those where like you can sit around and talk about like what does the end mean, but I can't really do that because you haven't seen it. So.
Oh, so you're saying I'm ruining everything right now?
A little bit. No. Here's what I can say okay. Without getting too spoilery. To me, you know, look, obviously we have been fans of Key and Peele for a long time. We've written for Jordan Peele in a lot of things, and we loved Get Out. But there was always a possibility, right, that the idea of Jordan Peele, serious filmmaker, that he was a one-hit wonder and that, you know what I mean? Right. Like that sort of exists.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I really feel like this movie, although I don't know that I would say it's as good as Get Out. It very successfully eliminates that possibility. You know, like you watch this and you're like, man, this guy's a really good director. Not just from, you know, the sense of creatively guiding a movie, but also from a technical standpoint, like it's really smart and well shot, and subtle. So to me, like that possibility, like this, to me, this is in a way Jordan Peele announcing himself, as you know, a generational filmmaking talent, which I think is really cool. I also sort of felt like I don't know that I wouldn't mind seeing him leave the thriller genre. I just like to see what he could do with something else. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's funny. That's what I said in my head when you said this is him announcing himself as not a one-hit wonder. And I'm by no means am I disagreeing, especially since I haven't seen it. And I wouldn't even say I ever was worried he was a one-hit wonder. Although, sure, I can acknowledge that was a possibility at a certain point. To really clear himself of that possibility, he's got to do something different, right?
I mean, I guess, you know, like,
well, maybe not the one hit wonder thing, but to like to be
Scorsese
like,
makes a lot of the
same
genre type movies, doesn't he? You know, nobody really seems to mind that so much.
Who?
Scorsese. Nobody's like, okay. You know,
enough with the gangsters.
Yeah,
I mean, you know what I think I mean? Some people are.
You know, no, look, obviously, I'm not trying to, I'm shortchanging the films of Martin Scorsese a little bit.
Right.
You know, but.
And I think I'm not mad at Jordan Peele. I'm just saying, if we're talking about Jordan Peele jumping a level to like one of the really great directors we have going, I think we need something different.
Yeah, I suppose it's true. Some of that, though, I think is a horror thing, right? Like you know, if you look at, say, Barry Jenkins, you know what I mean? He's made a couple of really similar kind of films, and I don't think that anyone's really going like, well, you know, when are you going to step outside of that box, Barry Jenkins? You know what I mean? So, nor should they, by the way.
No, I mean, look, I'm not, I only thought of that with Jordan Peele because you brought it up. I'm not aggressively going after either of them in that way, but I would say a similar thing about Barry Jenkins. Like, I don't know if Barry Jenkins can shoot a comedy. Not that he has to prove anything to anybody, but like, yeah, I would like to see a guy like that branch out. As much as I love,
well, and I feel the same way. I feel the same way about him and Jordan Peele. In that, you know, like I think it'd be really cool if they made a heist movie. Say, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
But like, I also don't require it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know, follow your muse. You know what I mean?
I agree with everything you said, with the one exception that there is that next level. And I, who's on that next level right now? I mean, I think you mentioned Scorsese. I think Paul Thomas Anderson. It's a short list, man.
Yeah.
Of like our greatest living directors. And I think if you want to get in there,
I mean, you got to put the Mexican dudes on it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would.
Sorry, that's Cuarón and Del Toro.
I don't know if I'd put Del Toro there. And frankly, I don't know if I'd put Cuarón there either.
Really? All right.
I certainly, no, not with Paul Thomas Anderson.
I mean, okay. I think they're in that conversation. There's one more I'm forgetting. Oh, Iñárritu is the other.
Iñárritu, I would be, I think, most favorable to, yeah, personally.
You know, is Damien Chazelle in that group? You know, or does he need more movies? Is Tarantino in that group?
I see Tarantino, I think, is an interesting question because he's so stylized. I think Spielberg's probably in there, right?
He also works so infrequently. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But
Thomas Anderson doesn't work that frequently, though.
No, you're right. He doesn't work that frequently. Slightly, was slightly more frequently than Tarantino, but not too much more. And, you know, for me, Soderbergh's in that group, and Fincher.
Soderbergh is in that group, I would agree.
As well. But I, you know, yep, people can feel differently.
There's probably, look, I'm sure there are women in PS. Steve McQueen might be in that group.
Yeah, maybe. Spike Lee.
Spike Lee is obviously in that group. Like I was going to say, I'm sure there are women and people of color that were missing, and I feel bad about it. But also, those people have not had nearly the opportunity you'd like. So our apologies, and also get it together, movie industry. But I do think,
yeah, I'm gonna lean more on the get it together movie industry.
Well, I forgot Spike Lee, so I feel bad. But the point is, there is that next level, and I think to go there, you got to do more. But to be fair, we've seen two movies, and they're one of them I loved. The second one is doing awfully well, and I think, you know, this is more a conversation about what's next for Jordan Peele, and isn't it exciting? Then it's a conversation about why hasn't Jordan Peele done X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's no, I mean, look, he's done two movies. You know, so like, I'm not really gonna hold him to you only do this thing or that thing. Like, it's fine.
Right.
I'm excited to see what else is coming up. Yet. I'm just saying, I would mind seeing him try his hand at something else now that I've seen two of these. The other thing I didn't really mention is Lupita Nyong'o. When we're talking about the women and people of color and getting it together industry, like, let's give Lupita Nyong'o more things to do. No one could possibly object to that, right?
Like, so let me just,
she's not working infrequently, but I would like to see her more than I do. You know what I mean? Because she's tremendous.
I agree. Let me throw something at you. Having not seen this movie, I'm guessing. Well, actually, I don't really know. Would you say race is a central theme here?
In Us?
Yeah. Like,
no.
Could this movie be, could this movie just as easily have been cast white?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. I think this is my point.
I don't want to give too much away.
No, I get it. But as long as that's true, if you're saying this movie just as easily could have been cast white, these are the roles we want to see more of people like Lupita Nyong'o in, the ones that just as easily could have been white.
Yeah.
Like, it's great that Lupita Nyong'o gets all these tremendous black empowerment roles, right? And it's good that those movies exist to the degree that they do, although there could be more. But what we don't see enough is great actors and actresses of color cast in just normal person roles.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. You know, Elizabeth Moss is in this movie, and she, you know, she's fantastic as always. But those two could have easily switched places. You know what I mean? They could have switched roles, and would have been fine.
And that's what I don't think the industry has quite caught up on. Is almost every time there's just a person, they're white.
Yeah. So,
you know,
yeah, no, and that's another another credit to Jordan Peele. I'm looking at Lupita Nyong'o's IMDb, by the way, and I, you know, I don't know, I don't. Well, she's busy, but it's a lot of it's Star Wars voice work. You know what I mean? Between 12 Years a Slave, which was her breakthrough in 2013, and now, you know, well, she was in Black Panther.
Yeah, but don't you think that's literally busy? That's literal busyness?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I think that's part of the reason you haven't seen a ton more. Like, I don't think anyone is doubting Lupita Nyong'o's, you know, cash ability. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying is I hope not. You know, so because she's
I don't
only,
think that's what's happening. I don't.
She's
I don't
only there's know. Only two. There she's got two movies in pre-production and a Star Wars in post-production. So,
but isn't that part of the thing? Is like these Star Wars deals both take a long time and you sign all sorts of stuff. Guaranteeing availability and
I don't
whatnot.
Know. You're right. It's probably possible that she is signed away for a large check.
I don't know.
It's just a shame because they don't even use her face. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, that's one that I don't love that thing because from my perspective, if we're casting all white dudes as the people who get stuff on their face, that's not going to be good either. So like, I like that she gets a look. You act in Star Wars or Marvel or DC, you're likely to have stuff on your face.
Yeah. No, that's
so that one doesn't bother me as much, but I agree with you that I would like to see more of her just playing people.
I mean, there's a lot of actual just regular people in Star Wars. A lot of regular people.
There's a few.
You know,
and plenty of them are played by people of color.
Yeah, no, that's always been a great thing about Star Wars. So anyway, wouldn't have minded just having her, even if it was just covered in a mask. You know what I mean? But like they took her and made her dead. All right,
I get it. It feels weird, but it's also like she did get the role. And again, I don't think anyone is worried about putting Lupita Nyong'o's face on screen. That's just the role she got.
Yeah. Let's get to some of this television stuff. Because there's a lot of it we want to cover. Where should we start?
Why don't we start with what we do in the shadows?
Okay. I watched this twice, and I gotta say, maybe because of the bar was really high for me, I was left a little bit wanting by this pilot. How about you?
Well, it just felt. I mean, it was funny.
Yeah.
I laughed, but it was just a B version of the film.
That's exactly that. That's sort of what now, I feel like. I feel like if I hadn't seen this film, I would have been like, yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I might even said that was hilarious, you know? But some of the jokes were almost identical, and the characters and acting was a little less charming. That said, I think that, you know, this was sort of the pilot, right?
Right.
And the pilot basically covered the same ground as the film. Now, if the entire first season basically covers the same ground as the film, I don't think either of us will be that thrilled. But if this is just setting the table for people who didn't see the movie, that's totally understandable.
Yeah. And look, it's a high comedic potential premise, right? The idea of modern day, making a documentary about modern day vampires roaming Staten Island.
Staten Island thing. I mean, like there's still tons of laughs here.
Yes. There's still some great things, but you know, what's not here is Jermaine Clement and right. Taika Waititi, who we have now sort of like, right. Like we've seen enough of those guys do other things to understand what kind of, comedic talents those are. What
do we know? Is Rhys Darby in it?
I don't believe that he is, but I don't know. Let's
so like we don't know about werewolves yet in this version. So like you said, this is a B version of the movie. That's really all it is. And I hope that's not all the show is, cuz I do feel like there's still a lot to be done here.
Yeah, and by the way, a B version of the movie, of that movie, I think just if that's all it is, like that's still kind of entertaining. You know what I mean?
I'm not even saying I wouldn't watch that, yeah. But I would be a little disappointed. And I, like I said, I think I'm even higher on how I might have felt if I hadn't seen the movie, because I do think like a lot of these jokes are softened considerably by the fact that I've seen them before.
Yeah.
But I still laughed a lot during this. So
I did too. The energy vampire thing too is a neat new twist.
And a very funny one, and that guy's perfect.
Yeah, they know.
So like it. You know, yeah, there's a lot, there's still a lot here, there's a lot they can do, and just, you know, hopefully they do it.
Yep. I would agree with that. No Reese Darby in the IMDb cast, so I'm gonna assume
that's a bummer.
He doesn't show up in any of these first 10 episodes. So hopefully they will get to some werewolves, though, because the werewolves were a delightful part of the film.
Yes.
And I guess we should just say, if you haven't seen the movie What We Do in the Shadows, go watch that now. You know what I mean? Like, just...
Yeah. Especially if there was any appeal to the show. Like, the movie is just a better version of what you saw in the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see where that one goes, I would say. I feel like I don't know if similarly disappointed was the right word, but I felt like both Barry and Veep, I had a similar reaction to.
I'm with you on Veep.
Where I was like, I'm glad to have this back. Well, I don't know if you're going to be with me on this because you haven't been watching a ton of it. But I felt like I was glad to have this back in my life. I didn't think either one of these was a particularly extraordinary episode of these shows. If that makes sense.
Yeah, let's go Veep first, just because, like you said, I don't watch it. So you're right. I was not glad to have it back in my life. I was confirmed in my decision not to watch it, and not in a nasty way, but this felt like an average episode of Veep. Like, I'm more than willing to acknowledge in watching the first few seasons of Veep, I remember much funnier episodes. I'm sure there will be much funnier episodes this season.
Yeah. By the way, the show changed a little bit too when they changed showrunners sort of midway through. So the original, the Armando Iannucci, the jokes were they're just, the pacing was a little different. And it was a little filth. Fear, if you can believe that.
Yeah. Well, that might be what I preferred. But either way, it's a little, first of all, it's a little too on the nose for me, politically speaking. And almost all of, unlike What We Do in the Shadows, What We Do in the Shadows was 30 minutes of, yeah, I've seen this joke before, but I'm still laughing. And Veep was, I've seen this before, I'm kind of annoyed, and at best I'm chuckling. And again, not in like a nasty way. Everyone's good, and I get it. This show's not for me, man.
Veep is
I can't enjoy this type of political thing at this moment in time.
Here's my Veep analogy. Veep is the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, okay. I don't love them either.
It's like, what if, you know, if punchlines are three-pointers, it's just like, what if we just fire up 45, 50, 60, 70 of those a game? Let's just see how many we can throw up. And let's go ahead and, you know, and then Julie Louis-Dreyfus is kind of James Harden. Right, where like we're gonna chuck a ton, we're gonna throw a ton of jokes at you, and occasionally we're gonna just clear out for Julia, and we're gonna see how many like and maybe this is the one thing where this sort of the Rockets analogy falls apart. Like, this show is crazy deep with comedic performers, right? Like, they're just so many like funny people who you see doing funny things elsewhere, and then they keep adding more. Like, Andy Daly shows up for the first time in this episode, you know, and it's like, they're just, you know, they've got, you know, Gary Cole, you know, and a lot of these guys get, you know, 2-3 lines a show, you know what I mean?
Matt Walsh pops up.
Yeah, Matt Walsh is, you know, and some of those times, you know, some characters are more central at times than others. Right. You know, they got, the Jonah character kind of pops in and out.
I gotta say,
you know, Patton Oswalt's in this now. Like,
yeah, I like that. I like Patton Oswalt. The Jonah character, though, was by far my least favorite thing about the episode.
Yeah, a lot's happened to Jonah since probably the last time you watched.
And I just didn't think his the like, I guess almost Trumpian shtick was funny at all.
It's really, I think he's just doing Jonah, to be honest. Like, yeah, Jonah was like that before Trump was really a thing. You know what I mean?
Less Trumpian than just like, you know, Stephen A. Smith style screaming nonsense politically.
Yeah, that's fair. Here's like, they sort of lucked into, they had this character who fit onto the, what if we just took just created this super crass, you know, a dumb candidate, you know what I mean? So it sort of, it just sort of worked out because he was there and available, and it's sort of perfect.
Right, but it's just, whatever the reason for making it Jonah, I just didn't think that stuff was funny at all.
Gotcha.
And again, I think some of it is just like, it's poking at a raw nerve. I'm not that excited about laughing at politics at the moment.
Yeah, it's too close to home for you, I think, for sure. I don't find it that way. To me, I don't find myself thinking about the real world all that much when I watch this show.
Yeah, nor do I. It's just, for whatever reason, I don't find it funny.
Yeah.
And I do think that is related. I'm saying, I think that's more about me than them.
Yeah. Did you feel the same way that I did about Barry?
Right. I was going to make the same transition, and I don't think I did. It sounds like you're a little more. I mean, okay. So, I think there are some. Not, it's not a pilot, obviously, but there's some pilotishness to the way this brings us back into the story.
Yeah. And I think the plot machinations portion of it was perfectly successful. I think they did a decent job of resetting a situation that when the last season ended, you didn't totally know how we were going to get out of that sort of scenario, right?
Right. I mean, we had a pretty good idea, right? But we didn't even know exactly what had happened. We still don't know exactly what happened in terms of what Barry did with the lady. So you're right that I'm not necessarily, when I'm calling it pilot, he's saying the plot didn't work so much as just this was a lot of plot. So I can understand why you might not have been, this wasn't your favorite episode of Barry, but I also thought it was, like, I'm not worried about Barry.
No, I'm not worried about Barry either. Like, yeah, I have zero worries about Barry. It's still a well-made show, and there are still moments, you know, the flashback scene.
Yeah.
Where you see that look on his face, after the kill and when he's, getting approval. Like, it's such a revealing moment about Barry as a character, you know?
For sure.
And it's really well done, I think. And there's a lot of there's plenty of those kind of little moments. I thought this episode was a little bit more broad too with the comedy than maybe some of the episodes have been, which I don't necessarily mind. It's not a bad episode, but I think there are greater heights still to be reached for season two of Barry.
Yes. Certainly, one would imagine that to be the case. But I feel like this was a good setup. Like, I'm happy with where we're at.
Yeah, in terms of resetting the board, it was successful, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find Miracle Workers to be successful?
You know, it's interesting that you asked me the question in that fashion, because I really quite liked it, but I don't know what it was exactly. I don't know if they can make more of it. I don't know, but like, I found it delightful and I watched it eagerly. So, thumbs up.
Yeah, I feel like thumbs up question mark. it's kind of where I'm at too. It seems to me to be conceived as a limited series, right? It definitely felt like, you know, we're making 8 of these, and then we'll see. Maybe, I don't know.
Right. I don't know what would be next, but I do know that, like, I found the mild allegorical themes cute and funny and moderately thoughtful, and I thought the acting performances were all quite wonderful.
Yeah, although I think in my head the idea of Steve Buscemi as kind of like shabby god had more comedic potential than I think it ultimately delivered. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it had more philosophical potential than it ultimately delivered.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
They really only got into that within the last, like, 2 episodes, honestly.
I actually did think he was really funny, but it was kind of it was a pretty one-note joke.
Yeah, no, it was a very one-note joke. And I don't know, you know, over the course of the season, it got a little one-note-y, I felt like. It felt a little one-note-y at times, although, you know, part of that is true to the characters. So many of the characters, I think, were really frustrated.
Exactly, Yeah, and I think it's the sort of thing where if they did bring it back for a second season, like, Steve Buscemi's God staying very one note could kind of come back around and be funny again, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What did you think? And I'm going to move right into spoiler territory here. What did you think of the decision not to have Craig and Eliza sort of hook up there at the end? They left that sort of. Well, ambiguous.
I mean, yeah, that leaves the door open for at least one plot line of season 2, right?
Right.
I don't think you need that. I think they told a story here, and I think it was a complete story, and you can, if we don't see it, imagine where that goes for yourself. I don't feel like every story has to tie up every knot, especially when they point you in a direction.
I never think that every story has to tie up every knot, but I feel like, I don't know, like, it just seemed like it's a weird thing. It felt like it was hinting at it pretty hard in the last couple of episodes, and then I feel like it sort of just stopped short at the end there, and I don't know if that was for the sake of leaving a narrative thread open, or if it was just kind of like, you know, the audience blue balls, for lack of a better term.
I mean, I guess it's pretty clear. It seems to me pretty clear where that is hopefully heading, in the same way that, like, aren't they almost in the situation now that the sort of principles that they were messing with were in at the beginning of the series?
At least with
Daniel Radcliffe, like, I really like this girl. Please let it work out.
Yeah, well, Daniel Radcliffe is. I don't know if we don't really know where Eliza is and all of that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, I don't know. I enjoyed that. And look, at the end of Good Will Hunting, he just goes to see about a girl. We don't know for sure what happens.
You're right. Fair enough. I think we have an idea, though, at the end.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if I project this forward, they're going to go on some dates or what have you, no? I don't feel too.
No, I don't think that that's a guarantee at all, to be honest, actually. Huh. But right. maybe I'm reading that wrong. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Black Monday, because I really enjoyed Black Monday.
Okay. I did too, but this is another one that feels like they designed it to be a limited series, right? Like, this has got to be over, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know what you do in season 2 without some sort of major time jump, right?
Yeah, but I don't know that I even care to see that.
Yeah, I mean,
let,
I don't,
let me ask you this. I also enjoyed this.
It's certainly a movie that, or a show that reveled in the periodness of it, right? Like the,
well, that part,
the 80s
also,
are a full on character in the story, really, right? You know what I mean?
Not just a, I'd say the.
You'd say, like, the main character?
Yeah, because as funny as this was, and this is not a ding on the acting, because in particular, I thought Don Cheadle and Regina, is it Hall?
Hall, yeah.
Regina Hall were awesome. And I thought guys like Paul Scheer, and I mean, look, Andrew Rannells is always good, but Paul Scheer and Horatio Sands with these sort of funny side characters were also great. But none of, like, do you care about any of these characters, really?
No, but I don't know that we're supposed to, because I feel it's definitely more of a vehicle for satire. I do think
that's my whole point. But, like, I don't need to see where Moe's at in 20 years or even 5.
No, but I wouldn't mind a send up of 90s business culture in the same way we got a send up of 80s business culture. You know what I mean?
No, if for that, sure. But don't you think that would almost be more effective with a different cast?
Maybe. Yeah. Potentially it could be. I do sort of feel like, we've talked about House of Lies on the show. I do sort of feel like I wish House of Lies was this. You know what I mean? Like, instead of what it was, because there was certainly enough comedic talent in that cast that if they had gone for something that was a little bit darker and sharper, and certainly way more gonzo than that show was, that would have been a vastly more entertaining show.
If House of Lies has had this aesthetic, then that could have been a satire that did go on for longer than a year. I would agree with that. Because that was a show where I thought there were some really great characters, but it was more in the Californication, entourage, we're just having fun here zone.
Yeah.
This show,
it was honestly, I would almost put it more in the, like, the ballers, we're just having fun zone.
Yeah. This show is funny and biting and clever, but does very little in the realm of character development.
No.
Which is fine. I agree with you, that's not the point, but I do think it makes it a limited series, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to see if there's anything written out for, like, that I can tell that there's more coming. But yeah, it does sort of, it really does sort of make for a limited series sort of vibe. Like I said, I think that if they're doing any more, they're gonna have to reset it. But I'm okay if this is all that there was. You know what I mean? Because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, sometimes that's fine. And I think this was good. I think it was funny, and I think it's worth watching. And you know, I do think it was a successful satire piece.
Yeah, I would agree with that. By the way, Leslie, I'm just looking at this. Leslie Headland, who directed Russian Doll, did a lot of the episodes in the show.
Oh, interesting.
Which is also another thing I liked about it. It was certainly more stylized, I think, than, say, House of Lies was back in the day.
Right.
And by the way, Casey Wilson's Tiff Georgina. Like,
very funny, man.
Just, it's nice to see Casey Wilson going for broke again on, you know what I mean, on television.
I'm a Casey Wilson fan, honestly.
Yeah. You know, she's definitely someone who can come off the bench and give you a Dion Waiters heat check. And those people are really valuable on a show like this, you know what I mean?
Totally.
All right, so that's a definite recommend. And I saved the one that I was feeling least sure about where you would be for last, and that is the case of Adnan Syed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Bad Time Entertainment? Is that...
I mean, you knew where this was going, right?
Is that the box? Well, here's the thing. I mean, look, I knew what we knew from Serial, and I didn't know...
Oh, you didn't know? You didn't know where the case was at?
And I knew that... I didn't know that he was in Serial, or I knew Serial, and I didn't... I knew that he... I'll put it this way, and I guess we're really I mean, I guess this is a spoiler alert. We're talking about a thing that's happening in real life, so I don't know.
We're talking about facts spoiled. From yeah. the world, but yeah.
But yeah, like, if Adnan Syed was a free man, I would have seen it in the news. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't say that I was aware of the facts of his case, but I was pretty sure he was still currently in prison.
But you didn't know his appeal had been rejected.
Right. I did not know his appeal had been rejected specifically.
All right, well, let me ask you this. As you watched, was there ever any doubt in your mind that somehow the government was going to stick it in his ass and reject his appeal?
Yeah, there was a little doubt. A lot of that was removed. A lot of that was removed by the fact that I knew he was still in jail. You know what I mean?
I guess I didn't know any of that, but I was positive he was not getting out.
The thing for me, that I think is, you know, as a companion to Serial is, you know, Serial's very inconclusive about, whether he is guilty or not. And I feel like the intervening years and what we've seen in the show to me has removed a lot of that doubt. Like, I just don't, I mean, I don't think you can definitively say he's not guilty, but it's really hard to say that there isn't reasonable doubt as to his guilt to me at this point.
Okay, so first of all,
so that's different.
Let's do the case quickly, the case thing. And your second point is the point to me. And I'm sick, frankly, just sick that we have to keep having this conversation. And not you and me, but America. If we want to have the rule of law and we want it to be successful and make sense, then the people who must above all obey that rule of law are those who enforce it. That's just period. End of story. And it doesn't, we shouldn't have to reiterate and discuss it as much as we do. This is very straightforward. You cannot reasonably have a system of laws if the people who enforce it ignore them. And that is what happened here. I hate to put it this way, because I fundamentally understand why there are people making the point about Heyman Lee. Hey, this was a person. Hey, we have to respect her memory, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't want to poo-poo that or disrespect her, because fundamentally, that is what happened to her is a horrifying tragedy.
Yeah, I do think the show does a good job of setting up her personhood. We talked about that.
I think they do a good job of that, and that's fine. But to be quite honest, I don't super care anymore, because there's an ongoing tragedy, and that tragedy is that an adult man has spent his entire adult life, more than half of his life in total, behind bars unjustly. And I can say that definitively. I don't need to know whether he committed this crime. I don't know whether he committed this crime. I suspect he did not. But I have questions just like everybody else. And unfortunately, we'll never get the answers to those questions because of behavior I would describe as outright criminally negligent, at best, by police. The most favorable view.
And by his own lawyer, right? I mean, like,
I guess
there was,
but his
literally
lawyer,
like, criminally negligent behavior on her part.
Oh, on her part, yeah. But he's had lawyers throughout this process who made attempts to get the law adhered to by authorities.
By the end, he had very good lawyers, for sure.
Well, but the weird, funny-looking guy with the long hair who he initially got didn't seem all that bad and was basically thwarted at every turn by cops acting inappropriately. And these cops continue to act inappropriately on camera today, 20 years later, unapologetically lying, unapologetically talking about their illegal behavior, and there are no consequences whatsoever. And not only are there no consequences, but a schmuck prosecutor trying to gain political clout is doubling down.
That was one of the things I didn't understand. By the way, it's like it seems to me you know, you're running for office in a very heavily Democratic area, right? To the point where there's no Republican candidate, right? So the Democratic primary is pretty much it. And you have a case that has come to renown because it's, you know, because of an NPR podcast. So let's just say there's high visibility within Democratic Party circles.
Okay.
Wouldn't overturning that case be the politically popular outcome? It seems to me to be really weird. Like, I would think if you're trying to run for office, don't you come out on freeing Adnan Syed, particularly if you're trying to run as a prosecutor reformer? Like, it's very weird.
First of all, it didn't work, which I think is notable. But second of all, this is the problem with American politics. It doesn't feel like a play to appeal to the voting populace at all. It feels like a play to appeal to crooked power brokers. Right?
Well,
that's what it feels like.
I don't know. Now,
it didn't work, but the fact that this is the way people behave in public office consistently.
Yeah,
because we see a documentary like this come out of every state damn near every year.
Well, look, I feel like a good companion piece to this is The Wire, right? In that The Wire takes place in the same city.
No,
which
it's
is convenient.
Seeing the motivations that dictate police work far too often.
Right.
That's what The Wire does effectively.
Exactly.
As it relates to this case.
And in the way that the legal system and the justice system and the political system are all connected, and they're connected in such a way where there is a heavy disincentive against overturning convictions, right? It's sort of the same thing that kind of comes up with making the murderer stuff, right? Is that the system is very ingrained to once you've gotten that stat, right? Like, the system definitely wants to dig in and keep that conviction, right? And in this case, right, you also have the heavy political pressure of the Korean community
who is
equally fighting to maintain this conviction. You know,
that to me, again, is unconscionable. And it's a disrespect to the person that they think they're respecting.
Well, it certainly
ignore the fact.
It certainly makes the eye of justice a lot less blind, right?
It doesn't. Obviously, but I'm saying, I'm disgusted with the Korean community, quite frankly. What possible argument is there for supporting a conviction that has blatant misconduct and misrepresentation of the facts that led to it?
Yeah,
What possible value is there in that? What value is there in banging the gong to keep someone in jail who is there inappropriately? And again, I can say that with 100% certainty, despite not knowing whether or not he committed this crime. I know for a fact he was put in jail irresponsibly and inappropriately because we just watched the facts about it. And the fact that anybody, no matter who, now it's one thing for the family to be blinded by grief and hatred. I can at least understand that. It doesn't make me feel great about them, but
well, look,
I can understand.
I can understand.
I
can understand in the moment, right, when you have a community that feels like they're under siege by a plague of violence and they're not getting justice, right? I can understand why you're like, somebody needs to answer for this. I get that.
Yes. But
the 20 years later part, you're right, to me is a lot harder to understand. It's a lot harder.
There's separate issues here. At the time, it's on the police for misrepresenting the facts and playing like they had it all wrapped up and convincing an entire community that they had their guy. And that community not having the full facts, not being well informed, and being incredibly grief-stricken and angry, of course I understand that. I do not understand that community rallying at this point. If you're holding a sign saying keep him in jail and you haven't briefed yourself on the facts that make it obvious he should not be in jail, I don't have sympathy for you. I don't understand what you're doing. And frankly, you make me angry.
Yeah.
And And even still, as frustrated and angry as that part makes me, it's nowhere near the fury that. Sorry, that's my alarm for when I normally wake up on a weekday.
Holsky's time to get angry.
time to lose it. But seriously, as frustrated and angry and sort of impotent as that part of it makes me feel, the fact that there is an independent prosecutor, which is not something that happens, continuing to prosecute a case that was under his purview when he was a district attorney, while he runs for a public office, using that community, pretending like he cares about that community to justify an ongoing injustice, a 20-year injustice, 20 years of constant injustice perpetrated against Adnan Syed. I hate to say it, but I have a lot more sympathy for him than I do for the people surrounding Haman Lee at this point. It's one is a horrible, awful 20-year-old tragedy. The other is an ongoing, awful 20-year continuing tragedy.
Yeah. At some point they're playing an active role in, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And people who say they are defending the memory of Haman Lee are actively obfuscating justice in the case of Adnan Syed.
Right. Well, and it's like our friend said, like, I don't think that, you know, if Hayes looking down on this, I don't think that this outcome is what she would want. You know what
no.
I mean? If there's any doubt about who killed her. So,
and if let's say, and first of all, I think it's in my mind, I'm much closer to thinking he's innocent, but let's say it's a 50-50 shot. Let's say 50% chance he killed her, 50% chance he didn't. First of all, I would just like to reiterate
Textbook reasonable doubt right there, right?
Exactly. That's textbook reasonable doubt. Second of all, we would have a much clearer picture if the cops had properly investigated it and not picked their suspect and worked backwards, as so many people pointed out,
mm-hmm.
which there's literal written evidence of them doing. So it's their fault. We don't have more answers. Not that we necessarily ever would have gotten complete answers, but we certainly could have gotten more information if they had done their damn job in the first place. And then now we're in this spot where if we're saying there's a 50% chance he didn't do it, which again I think is conservative, you're talking about if this girl is somehow somewhere looking down on this, a person she loved being persecuted for 20 years for nothing.
Yeah. Person with promise too.
Yes.
I don't, you know, if you're like me and you don't really think Adnan did it, who did?
Man, that's why I'm not sure, is because it's just, it seems like if he did not do it, the overwhelming odds are essentially some random person did, whether that's Alonzo Sellers. But that doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because if you did that, why bother reporting it?
Right.
Just leave her there, right?
It's Alonzo or the LensCrafters guy, right?
Or it's just anyone.
Or
it's
just some
psychopath.
Random person strangled her and... Yeah,
sure.
I guess. I don't know.
Who knows? There is random DNA. Any number of things could have happened. Mm. And again, that's part of the problem. We don't know. We don't know where some of these people are. To your point, the DNA could belong to one of the people in this case who has never had their DNA on file.
Yeah. Let me pull back for a second, because obviously, you know, you were engrossed in this and you have some thoughts and some fury. What about as a piece of entertainment? You know what I mean? Like, where are you at?
I think it's a well-made documentary. I think they really tried hard to get all sides of it. I think they really tried hard to ask the right questions to the right people, even when they were difficult. And I thought it was a thoughtful, well-shot piece. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, speaking of which, and we can transition sort of into homework from this. We didn't talk about this in the show meeting, and we have 8,000 things that we are going to talk about watching. But have you watched any or heard anyone talk about this Inventor documentary that's been on HBO?
I have heard a lot about it. I have not watched it, and I am only a little bit ashamed to admit that I barely remember this story.
I wasn't familiar with the story at all.
Okay.
But I got sucked into it last night. It's an
you watched it.
Yeah, it's an Alex Gibney documentary, and it's engrossing. It's an incredible thing that has happened here. And I can't believe that I didn't really know anything about it, to be honest. But it's quite a story. So I'd recommend that one.
Okay.
And might be worth watching and discussing. There are a definite bunch of things that we do want to watch this week. So we should probably start with those. Brockmire returns tonight. You know, we love Brockmire. We ride for Brockmire on the show. Probably more than any show out there I think I've seen, to be honest. Killing Eve also comes back. We ride for that, but not more than other people. I think other people have done a pretty good job of riding for Killing Eve.
Killing Eve has a regular posse of riders, but it doesn't diminish it at all, man. I want to use hyperbole. It's not true, but like I want to say I'm even more excited for this than I am for Game of Thrones. That's a lie. But even that lie is a representation of how excited I am about Killing Eve.
Yeah. And then are you more excited for Killing Eve than you are for the return of the Shy? Because I feel like that's in your like personal top five somewhere.
You're not wrong. I'm in a tough spot here. I really and truly, look, Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones. Nobody needs my help understanding what's great about that. But The Shy and Killing Eve are really two of my personal favorites of the last several years, and that they're both coming back the same Sunday, a week before Game of Thrones, is like almost a little too much.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, man.
We're not done, by the way.
Nope.
Because there's the very final episode of You're the Worst.
Yeah. Which, again, we ride for about as hard as anyone.
Yeah. And I'm willing to ride for this season in particular, but we can talk more about that later.
I'm very excited to talk about this season. I just am so – how about this? Let's do 30 seconds right now. Do you have any idea what's about to happen?
No.
How incredible is that? Think about all the stuff we just talked about today and how often we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
How often we had a pretty good feel for it. And this is a show we've seen, what are we in, fifth season, right? We've seen at least 50 episodes of this.
Yeah, probably and close to 60.
We love it. And we love these characters. And they're well drawn. And we have no idea what's about to happen in the finale.
Yeah.
No idea.
Or like kind of where the arcs of certain characters I think are going to sort of end.
There's an incredibly broad range of outcomes that would make sense to me.
Yeah. I'm interested to see all the bows that get tied, particularly with some of the secondary characters and stuff, too.
Yeah, man. I'm very, very excited about this.
Sorry. So that wraps up. That's tonight, if I'm not mistaken. And then next week, Fosse Verdon premieres on FX. That's Sam Rockwell, Michelle Williams, and the story of Bob Fosse, the choreographer.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If someone was like, oh, they're making a Bob Fosse show, what would your response have been?
I think somewhere in that range.
Okay, mine would have been Bob Fosse. Why do I know that name?
I know who Bob Fosse is, and I don't particularly care for the Bob Fosse oeuvre of art. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Definitely not in my wheelhouse, you know, Chicago and whatnot.
I'll fight you.
The city. I love the city of Chicago. I mean,
I know I'm making a joke.
Yeah, damn it.
Musicals are we have a well-established position on musicals, and
yes, My position on that is certainly very well established. This show, however, looks great.
Both of us are open to being interested in elements of choreography, but I think we'd both want something a little less cheesy, much in the same way we feel about musicals as an art form.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed. Okay.
Indeed. Look, if you're like, hey, I made a show about this dude who won 8 Tony Awards, like, I'm not in yet.
Like, right. But, you need to keep talking. I'm guessing you're in exactly the same position as me then. Like, around the W of Rockwell, you're in?
I would say I need Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell, but wow, yeah, okay. By the time you're done with that, then I'm good. I'm good to go.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's a pairing that like I'm just very excited to see how that works.
Yeah.
I don't know what that dynamic is going to be like, but I do know Sam Rockwell is probably my favorite actor, and Michelle Williams is one of the best doing it. So I'm excited about this, even though the subject matter holds virtually no interest to me.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like now, it's like now once you get those two together. It's like, okay, they're not screwing around. You know?
Yeah, and our position on FX productions in general is also well established.
Correct. I'm always going to give those guys the benefit of the doubt. So, and I would say, like, it. I mean, this, I would say, feels like one of the buzzier shows of the season so far.
Yep. You know?
So, so a lot of excitement for that. And
by the way, do you realize... I believe the next time we speak will be the final day of the NBA regular season.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So we'll probably have some things to talk about there, too.
I want to do a little playoff preview.
So I would say, so we got all of that stuff. Plus, you know, if you want to watch Alpha Blood, I would recommend that. Plus, you know, if you're like me, you're probably going to do...
Game of Thrones rewatch.
Game of Thrones rewatch. Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, Aya Cash from You're the Worst is in Fosse Verdon as well.
Woo!
Evan Handler.
Okay. I enjoy Evan Handler.
Yeah. Paul Reiser.
All right. Yeah, I'm sold. You didn't have to keep listing cast members.
And what excites me is that there is Jerry Orbach's not in the show, obviously, because sad. But someone is playing the fictional Jerry Orbach, so I'm excited about that. Yeah. And there's also someone playing fictional Shirley MacLaine and Liza Minnelli, which will be great too. Okay, so there's all that stuff. Plus, we are also going to try at some point in the next few weeks to talk about The Highwaymen, which is the Woody Harrelson, Kevin Costner movie on Netflix.
Yes.
And then I wrote down Native Son, but I've already forgotten what that was.
That's the Richard Wright novel adaptation, an HBO movie, updating the Richard Wright novel to modern day Chicago.
Thank you. And then HBO, and that's coming on Saturday on HBO. So,
correct. Big week.
Yeah, there's a crap ton out there. You know, cancel all your plans. Just stay in for the next 5 days.
Get out there. And by out there, I mean on your couch. And start watching stuff, damn it.
Because, I got a feeling we may have a two-hour show, and it's coming real soon.
And you better be prepared. And I got to go prepare right now. Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.